Today's scripture reading is from the book of Isaiah, chapter 61, verses 1 to 4 and 8 to 11. God's Spirit is upon me because God has anointed me. God has sent me to bring good news to the poor, to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim release for captives and liberation for prisoners, to proclaim the year of our God's favor and the day of vindication for our God, to comfort all who mourn, to provide for Zion's mourners, to give them a crown in place of ashes, oil of joy in place of mourning, a mantle of praise in place of discouragement. They will be called oaks of righteousness, planted by our God. They will rebuild the ancient ruins. They will restore formerly deserted places. They will renew ruined cities, places deserted in generations past. I, your God, love justice. I hate robbery and dishonesty. I will faithfully give them their wage and make with them an enduring covenant. Their offspring will be known among the nations and their descendants among the peoples. All who see them will recognize that they are a people blessed by God. I surely rejoice in God. My heart is joyful because of my God, because God has clothed me with clothes of victory, wrapped me in a robe of righteousness, like a bridegroom in a priestly crown, and like a bride adorned in jewelry. As the earth puts out its growth, and as a garden grows its seeds, so God will grow righteousness and praise before all the nations. Here ends the reading.
Thank you, Nori and Kyoko, for being our lectors for this Sunday. It is lovely to have you as part of our worship service. So I want to tell you a little bit of a story. It was in the early months of 1996, and it was a Sunday, and it was a Sunday in which Kirsten and I were doing what we did many Sundays at that time, which was going to look at open houses. And we pulled up to this house, and we parked behind a very ramshackle and dilapidated fence. It was a house that I had been to once before, and I thought that Kirsten might want to see it. And I got out of the car and I started to walk towards the house, walk past the fence, and I turned around to see if Kirsten was there with me. And she was still sitting in the car with the windows up and the engine running. And I turned and I went back and I said, don't you want to come in? And she looked at me and she said, oh, hell no. Oh, hell no. I'm not getting into that house, because if you looked at the house, it looked in even worse condition than from that ramshackle and dilapidated fence that we were parking behind. And so I looked at her and I said, what can I tell you? It has a beautiful Milo tree in the backyard, and it's all we can afford. And so I'm still not certain why it is we ended up putting in an offer on this house, why it is that somebody accepted it, because it was a really low offer, and is the house that we still live in. But on day one, on the day of that open house, try as hard as she might, the realtor could not conceal that we could not even go into the backyard, the overgrown backyard, because the house had settled so much that none of the windows and none of the doors would open any longer. The realtor could not conceal the fact that we could look through parts of the floor and see the ground below us. There were so many pukas in the floor. They could not conceal the fact that none of the appliances worked, the peeling paint, the mildewed stains, the deck that we couldn't step on because we couldn't open the doors, but we wouldn't want to step on it anyway, because clearly the termites had had a feast on that deck and would have collapsed under anything. but it did have a magnificent Milo tree, I will tell you that. And it was all we could afford. So a few months later, on Saturday, May 18th, 1996, we took ownership of 336 Ilimano Street. Barely four-year-old Micah and not yet one-year-old Naya stayed that day and much of that weekend, that first weekend, with my parents. And on that day, Kirsten and myself and a crew of friends with sledges and crowbars and hammers and all manners of saws got to work. And in that first weekend there, we took three 14-foot long flatbed truckloads to the Kailua dump of interior and exterior debris. Bougainvillea branches that were 30 feet long. Kitchen appliances, cabinets, cupboards, all whose day had clearly come and gone. All manner of rotted wood and busted pipes and a spaghetti of old electrical wire. And once gutted, the general contractor, then the next week, began to work. And I was in, the timing was perfect because I was still chaplain at Punahou School there. I had a summer off, and Kirsten and I spent between 10 and 14 hour days working side by side with this contractor, grunting and hauling and hammering and sawing and painting and whatever else needed to be done. And we had planned it really well because we knew in those 3 months we could get the project done. Three bedrooms would expand to four. Two baths would become to three. Kirsten's laughing in the background right now, even as I'm saying this. The kitchen would be gutted and we would have a total makeover. The floors would be repaired, sanded, and refinished. New windows, new walls, new appliances, new fixtures. When it was all done, when we looked at the plans, we could see that only one room would have the same floor plan that it had at that time. Only one wall, exterior wall of one room would not be touched. We could see it in our mind's eye. We could see it in the plans. We could see it in the work that our hands were doing. What we had not counted on, though, was halfway through that summer, the contractor, who was really not even a fourth of the way through his work, decided it was time for him to skedaddle out of town, take our money, and run to Europe for 4 months. We had not counted on by the fact that the time that we had to move into that house, that we would indeed have a working toilet, a working sink, and a working shower, but none of them would be in the same bathroom. We had not counted on the fact that there would be no steps in or out of the house. We didn't think about the subcontractors that would come in and dump all of their debris into our yard and kill the yard, the termites that were going to strike the new wood within a month of its installation. We had not counted on this three-month project still being in process when Micah, who was four when we began, was graduating from high school 14 years later. And listen to my wife laughing into the background. This is the reason why she doesn't sit up with me when I'm in the pulpit in the sanctuary. Now, go back 2,500 years ago or more, and scholars speculate that Isaiah 61 that Nori read for us just a minute ago was written well after the Jewish exiles had been allowed by Cyrus of Persia to return to Jerusalem from Babylon. Well after they had seen not just a dilapidated house as we saw, but a city that had been razed to the ground and its central temple utterly demolished. But just like the Baumgart-Turners did 25 years ago, the returning exiles saw opportunity and they threw themselves into the moment of this new possibility and they began the laborious process of rebuilding their city. Now, Kirsten and I lamented that 10 plus years after we had started our rebuilding project, it was still not done. The returning exiles rebuilding project, the scholars will tell us, lasted for at least 100 years, and at 100 years, it was still not done. Kirsten and I ached over the general contractor who abandoned us for sure, who only returned to finish some of the work because of legal action that was put upon him. We lamented the fact that of all the subcontractors that worked on our house, only the person who installed our gutters, who installed the sprinkler system, would we ever hire back again. Not a painter, not an electrician, not a carpenter, a plumber, a drywaller, none of them. None of them seemed to care for the space that we were trying to make a home. For 100 years, though, That was just 10 plus years. For 100 years, the leaders of Jerusalem, like Zerubbabel and Ezra and Nehemiah, the prophets of Jerusalem, like Daniel and Haggai and Zechariah, they exhorted the people to care. But there were problems with their cousins, the Samaritans up north. There were problems with all the neighboring countries that were warring on their borders and with them. There were problems with an economy that kept failing here in Jerusalem and in Judah. There were problems with the plans that were being changed every year as new leaders came into power. There were problems with religious laws and purity laws, and more problems. The rebuilding of the city dragged on and on and on for generation after generation. And yet, as Nori read for us, Isaiah sings in today's scriptures of God's love for this space and these people who could not rebuild without acrimony and angst. God is singing through Isaiah. You who mourn, who are adorned in ashes, the day is upon you when you will wear a crown. You who gather in mourning, Isaiah says, for what has happened, the day is upon you when you will let oils of joy pour over your face. You who carry long faces of discouragement, the day is upon you when you will instead carry a mantle of praise. Declare this day, God says to Isaiah, and thus to the people, to be the start of the year of jubilee, of jubilation, the year of joy, a time of celebration, a time when all debts will be canceled, when all captives will be set free, when all the brokenhearted shall be mended, when the poor shall see an end to their suffering. Generations after the project was begun, generations of infighting and barely measurable progress at times, and God calls the prophet to sing with joy. How can this be? It's utterly incongruous. And then I think about the men of Kailua Christian Church, our home church in 1996 and beyond, who finished worship one Sunday and continued their fellowship that afternoon by sawing and painting and hammering and hanging siding at our house in the midst of a contractor that had gone away, accomplishing in one afternoon what I could have gotten done in an entire month. I thought about my attorney friend who let me weep in his office as I cried over this contractor who had gone south with all of our money, then structured the agreement that we needed, pro bono on his part, to get him back to finish the job. I thought about, in the midst of all of that construction and deconstruction that was going on, the birthday parties that we still had, birthday parties that included little boys and girls in Superman capes, tea parties and princess parties and Robin Hood and pirate parties, sleepovers fueled by pizzas and root beer floats and cucumber masks and Star Wars and Disney princesses. I thought about, in the midst of all this going on with stairs that wouldn't go in and go out, the Halloween parties that we had, the Millennial Youth Congress gatherings that we hosted, the launching of summer programs, anniversary parties, Thanksgivings with friends and families and strangers. I thought about in that kitchen as it came into being, loaves of bread baked and pies baked, and the banana and the ulu and the lilikoi and the papaya grown on our property and consumed. I thought about that Milo tree right there in the backyard with its three-story treehouse, with a zip line from the house to the treehouse, with a drawbridge to the adjacent playhouse with swings and slides and pulleys to bring up food, the sunrises and the moonrises we watched, the cargo net that could hold 10 partying teenagers and keep them safe in that tree. And I thought about the last 2 years of my time at Camp Mokuleia when we moved out to the North Shore, first at the camp and then into Waialua, into buildings that were accommodated our family. But on the day in which we moved back to 336 Ilimano, even though we could hardly move because of all the boxes that were askew in there on that day, it felt like we were finally home. Along the way, almost unaware, jubilation, jubilee, joy happened. not in the finished product. It's still not done. But just as was the case in Jerusalem, but in the process of getting to it. The joy was not in the checkoffs of the to-do list, though that can sometimes be satisfying, but just like for the people of Jerusalem in the step-by-step movement towards a goal larger than ourselves. The soul of our home, just like in Jerusalem, has been not in its perfect execution, or if that was the case, our home would have no soul, but in the love poured into the cumulative moments of life together. As Father Oscar Romero is quoted, though it's said that another priest wrote these words, he says, it helps now and then to step back and take a long view. We accomplish in our lifetime only a tiny fraction of the magnificent enterprise that is God's work. We plant the seeds that one day will grow. We water seeds already planted, knowing that they hold future promise. We lay foundations that will need further development. We provide yeast that produces far beyond our capabilities. We cannot do everything. And so what we do may seem incomplete, but it is a beginning, a step along the way, an opportunity for God's grace to enter and do the rest. We are workers, he reminds us, not master builders, ministers, not messiahs. We are prophets of a future, not of our own. The day of God's favor that Isaiah speaks about may point to a once in every 50-year event, the Jubilee, as the Bible talks about, but it also points to our everyday, whether that be if we are rebuilding a home, restoring a holy city, or today, building the beloved community as a church. It is not about, never has been about, whether the task has been completed, but it is about how we engage the task and the joy we allow to be part of that. For instance, every name of innocent Black and brown people senselessly crippled and killed is an almost daily stark reminder that the task of ending systemic racism is still far from over in our country. But in the journey of that task, let us not forget that we have seen an African-American person elected to be president, something that would have been impossible to conceive of even 20 years ago. We have seen African-Americans like John Lewis and Tracy Blackman become the conscience of our nation. We have seen the turnout of Black and brown and indigenous people, the people of color, being some of the most consequential votes in a presidential election. The journey towards ending systemic racism, that task, that project is far from over, but let us not forget to rejoice in where we have come and the work that we have done. We are workers, not master builders. We are ministers, not messiahs, prophets of a future not our own. Or think about the fact that every species loss, every degree of global warming, every extreme climate event is a reminder that the journey from standing apart from to standing as part of God's creation is far from over. But in that journey of that task, who would have thought that even right now, as environmental laws are being rolled back in the last days of this presidency, such as attempting to open up the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge for timber and oil development, that all of the major banks that would typically fund such development have said that they will not invest in such endeavors. That BlackRock, the world's largest assets manager, managing over $7 trillion worth of assets, has made the decision in the year 2020 to no longer invest in companies that prevent a high sustainability-related risk, such as coal producers. And it will make sustainability integral to the portfolio construction and risk management. The bastions of capitalism are finding their way to understand that we need to be part of creation, not apart from it. That journey is far from over, but let us rejoice in where we have come, because we are workers, not master builders. We are ministers, not messiahs. We are prophets of a future, not our own. And I look at us, Church of the Crossroads, We are a church, as one of you once said to me, a small church with big church aspirations. We want desperately to see the beloved community become a reality, to truly celebrate the kingdom of heaven and earth as one. And so we feel deeply the ruptures and fractures of our societal fabric, the ever-present inequities and injustices made even more stark by this pandemic moment of our lives. At times these past 9 months, I have felt your frustration at being unable to do what we most often do because we are not outside on the streets with the people, we are inside. And yet, we must remind ourselves that we are warriors, not master builders. We are ministers, a priesthood of ministers, not messiahs, prophets of future, not our own. And in those 9 months, in order to continue to do ministry in new and different ways that we might never have anticipated, at this day 1 year ago, you all have learned how to Zoom. You've learned how to give your contributions, offerings online. Our Zoom worship services represent at least a 50% to 100% growth in participation in Sunday morning worship. Our offerings online have helped us to not only meet all of our pledges at this point, but to go another 15% beyond in the donations that people have come than we ever budgeted. You have continued somehow to find a way to come together with masks on and socially distanced to continue to cook for IHS. And you have continued now when Galen and Kathy have come to us with the possibility of how we can help Family Promise in its new iteration to figure out how to get together and cook. And you have not, and this is very significant, have not pushed the church leadership to take advantage of the city's exemptions for religious services that would allow us to indeed be in person, to bring us back together, face to face, shoulder to shoulder. Because you are determined, I have begun to understand, to stay indoors, not for your safety, but for the safety of others. The journey of being the church, the beloved community, is far from over. But let us rejoice in where we have come. The Jesus Project that begins in a stable, a beginning we will celebrate in just 12 days, carried on. It carried on with a myriad of ups and downs in the 33 years of Jesus's life, from womb to tomb, from death to new life, but it carried on beyond that resurrection moment into the lives of disciples and apostles and the early followers, into the lives of mystics and saints and thinkers and doers, into the lives of the ordinary and the amazing, like those of a place called Crossroads. The Jesus Project, like a remodeled home, a restored city, will probably always be a work in progress. But it is a work in progress. Let us rejoice that it is in progress, not regress. Let us rejoice for where that progress has taken us. For we who are workers, not master builders, we who are ministers, not messiahs, we who are prophets and makers of a future not our own, we are part of that Jesus Project, that part of the restoration of the world. Let us rejoice in what we have been part of and what is still to come. Amen. We are.